Now more than ever, consumers expect comprehensive and efficient digital solutions when making purchases and managing them. But what does that mean for organizations, individuals, and suppliers within the complex world of travel? This podcast episode is part of a special mini-series of ARC Talk called Omnichannel Chatter, where we sit down with experts and key players in the industry to talk about all things omnichannel retailing. Let's dive in.
Welcome, everyone. I'm Shelley Younger, and I'm here with my colleague, Sarah Boyd.
Good morning.
Good morning for another episode of Omnichannel Chatter. We're joined today by Kyle Moser at Cornerstone, and I'm going to turn it over to Kyle to give a few minutes of who are you, Kyle, and where did you come from, and how did you get in this business?
Okay. Happy to do that. Thanks for having me. Again, my name is Kyle Moser. My official title is Senior Vice President of Business Development and Consulting at Cornerstone Information Systems. And that's really kind of a long way of saying that I do a lot of different commercial things for Cornerstone. I can explain a bit about that. I've been with the company 17 years. I used to say I did not come from a travel background, but it's too late to say that anymore. I started my career I started my career way back in the late 80s, mid 80s in banking. Born and raised in New York City, worked for Chase Manhattan Bank, went through corporate credit training, and as soon as I got out of that, I sat behind an orange screen Lotus 123 gadget, you know, and they told me, you know, do all this loan covenant analysis. And then I was like, nope, can't do that. found my way into, of all things, the student loan business. And if you want to talk about a very interesting place to be, we could do that offline. I then kind of sort of got my way into technology, if you will. I went to work for a small company in Rhode Island. And what they did was kind of an early version of payment processing for universities. Again, lots of stuff behind that. You know, it was the right business at the right time to make an awful lot of money. That brought me out to Indianapolis, which is where I live now, a town called Noblesville. In a similar line there, I actually got exposed to a sales training methodology called solution selling, which kind of all of a sudden opened my eyes to what I thought I really wanted to do. So I got certified in that. I had my own consulting company for about 8 years, did consultative sales training for mostly technology-oriented companies, hardware, software, IT services, that kind of thing. And that's how I met Cornerstone. They were actually a customer of mine. So this was back in 2003. You know, I got in there and I was like, God, this is a really interesting business. And it was filled with turmoil, right? There was all kinds of change going on all the time. That seemed to be a smart little group of people. And the stars just lined up, right? They were going from a model where we sold, you know, deployed software to, you know, what was then kind of hosted stuff, right? Which really meant a whole different way of talking to customers, creating vision, right? Implementing technology. And it just was a good fit. And I guess I must like it. Right.
Stuck around.
17 years. Well, right. I stuck around.
Seems like it.
So I guess I do. I really do. So
awesome.
It's a lot of fun. Yeah.
So how would you describe what Cornerstone does to somebody maybe outside of the industry?
Yeah, that it's kind of funny you ask, right? Because I've tried to do it many times. you know, outside the industry is a little hard. The example I use, right? So if I had to boil our mission down into a single word, it's automation, right?
Wow.
So people outside the industry kind of they shake their head and go, yeah, okay. So for example, right? I'll go on, right? You've made a travel reservation, right? You've called an agent or you've booked on Expedia or something like that. And they all say, yeah. And I say, all right, well, you want to go someplace. So somebody's got to assemble a trip for you, right? Yep. Okay. So So when you hit enter on that reservation, whether you or your travel agent, unbeknownst to you, a lot of stuff has to happen, right? You know, if you're traveling for business, you know, is your cost center there? Is your profile information in, or are your frequent flyers number there? You know, do you know, did you explain why you're going and why you took this air versus another airfare? If you're booking on an Expedia, for example, for a leisure trip, unknown to you, right? You're going to make a trip. It's 6 months out. The carrier is going to make 3, 4, 5 changes to your reservation, you know, for good reason. Well, somebody's got to look at those. Somebody's got to say, you know, can he or she make it or not? That's what we do, right? So we're all about automating kind of the things that you would never see that hopefully will make your trip, you know, as least disruptive as possible in accordance with, you know, the policies and the like that your customers, that your employer, you know, may have in place. So that's it, really, that kind of automation, right? Nuts and bolts stuff.
I love that clear sort of explanation of all of the stuff that goes on in the background that many of us don't even think about.
Well, you know, it's funny, actually, because I've been thinking about this a lot, right? You know, in particular in the world of omnichannel NDC, right? You know, it occurred to me just the other day, right? You know, a travel reservation, you know, what does a travel reservation have in common with an iceberg, right? Well, only about 10% of it is visible, right?
Oh, wow.
You know, nice little thing sitting on the top, but there's this mass of stuff that goes on underneath that most people don't get. Everybody has their angle on the iceberg, right? But there's a lot down under there. So,
but that's anyway. Stuff that's going to sink the Titanic, right?
That is
like the stuff that's under the water.
Yeah.
That's why we're in business, to keep it from being the Titanic.
trying to keep the Titanic from sinking.
Right, exactly. Exactly.
What do you think? By the way, absolutely love that description. That's the first time I've heard it fit, like kind of the tip of the iceberg, if you will. And I might have to steal some of that from you.
Oh, that's okay. Not copyrighted. So.
What do you think makes you different from your competitors, Kyle? Like, what separates Cornerstone from others in the market that do what you do?
Yeah. I would say that, you know, there are a lot of companies, a lot of companies that do aspects of the things we do, right? You know, GDSs have scripts, right? You know, booking tools have, you know, some linear logic, right, that go through them. There's lots of different places to get help with aspects of making and servicing reservations. Say from Cornerstone's perspective, you know, we focus not necessarily on accomplishing a particular task, but, and this is going to sound a little bit marketing, right, so I don't quite mean it that way, but it's really kind of ensuring the integrity of a transaction, you know, across its lifespan, right? So from the time a booking is made, right, that's where we start, right? We bring a platform together that, you know, has, after 30 years of experience, right, that Cornerstone's been around, kind of modularized many, of the different functions that have to occur, you know, for in the end, a high quality data packet to be produced. Because our customers, again, you boil down their mission. And most our customers, by and large, are travel management companies. We have around 450 clients around the world, right? We go from Australia to the other side of the time, you know, timeline. Really, if you summarize it, they're in business for two things. One, to serve their customers and get paid, right? And what that really requires is very, very high quality data as regards a transaction, right? So what makes us different is that we look at the transaction, you know, more as an ecosystem. And in the end, what we want to do is drive a high quality packet of data to that customer's servicing system. And that lets them do those two things, right? Take care of their customers and get paid for what they do.
That's good. If you weren't, I'm going to put it a little differently. I'm going to ask a slightly different question. If you were not around, what would happen to the TMCs? Not, and they couldn't go to another one of your competitors. So to put it a little bit more bluntly, if you didn't exist tomorrow, what would the impact be for TMCs?
Well, they could still do what they do, right? They could still go to a source. They could still make a reservation, right? They could drive that reservation one way, shape, or form to a back office system, right? So the world wouldn't end, right, if we didn't exist. But what we do, I think we all know it, right? You know, commissions don't really exist to a large degree, right? So a source of revenue, you know, is kind of down, right? You know, GDS revenue share, I don't know, right? There's a lot of pressure on that notion of the middleman, right? The agency, whether it's corporate or leisure. So if we weren't around, I look at our customers, while they could still do what they do, the cost of processing and servicing a reservation would significantly increase, right? The revenue dynamics around it are such that in a lot of cases, they'd be underwater, right? You know, certainly as corporates have driven toward online booking tools, which means a lower service fee, you know, anytime a human touches a reservation, right?
It's very expensive.
Percentage wise, it's just very expensive.
Yes.
So that's where our customers would really go. I mean, the number of people required to do very repetitive tasks, you know, would just go up and they'd have a really big struggle.
Thank you. That actually, I think, helps me. And again, probably some folks that may not be quite as familiar with what you do. Thank you.
Yeah.
Has Cornerstone always been the sort of entity it is today? Has the company changed over your 17 years or even before in sort of focus or mission?
Well, we've always had a singular focus on travel, right? No question about that. Our business really breaks up into kind of two columns, right? So one is this workflow automation, right? You know, our product name for workflow automation happens to be IQCX. Many people say IQCX because it flows off the tongue better. We should copyright that too, but we haven't. The other side is a data reporting product called iBank, right? And that's by and large, you know, when 17 years ago when I came in, it was at the time ResQCX, the deployed version of the software, and this iBank thing. We really worked them and sold them kind of in two separate, you know, silos. Some people wanted reporting, some people wanted, you know, quote unquote quality control. That's the way it was really thought of back then. You know, but over time, I'd say the biggest change, right, has been the merger of those two platforms into, you know, and again, it sounds kind of marketing-ish, so forgive me, but that more ecosystem, right? Because it really is all about the data around that trip, right? And the ability to capture it, to ingest it, to understand it, right? And then to either use it operationally, right? Or use it for the various types of decision-making. Sometimes it's supplier management, it's negotiating my contracts. But other times, and we do this with quite a few customers today, you know, it is really breaking down the data that comes out of the workflow system to look at breakpoints, right? To look at process failures, to look at places where you did not optimize, for example, the amount of revenue you could make because, you know, you misapplied a contract, right? Or a, you know, an IT number or whatever to, you know, call them back there. So I would say that the biggest change has been that it is more and more about the data around the trip that enables somebody to actually service a reservation and make a profit to it. So.
Makes sense. So you mentioned omnichannel. Obviously, this podcast is called Omnichannel Chatter, at least the mini-series is. So how does Cornerstone see omnichannel in the travel ecosystem?
Yeah, it has been interesting, right? And bear with me, I'll give you a little back story. We do work with customers all over the world, right? So no question, right? You know, but we are a U.S.-based company, right? Probably 60% of our customers are here. Although we do work with the biggest, you know, out there. So we have a sensitivity to what goes on outside the U.S. I myself, right, when I, you know, after several years in Cornerstone, kind of learning the difference between a GDS and a PNR, right, you know, I started becoming more involved in our customers that were either outside the U.S. or had a significant global footprint, right? So I've been to every continent except one for Cornerstone. You know, came to understand, you know, the differences in different places and how travel is done differently, right? You know, it's really important to be able to make rail bookings if you're in the UK, right? Here, not so much, right? So we started to become much more exposed to fragmented data sources, even this is, you know, 10 years ago, right? And it kind of manifests itself in simple stuff like, you know, I'm a travel agent, I'm in the UK, I need to make a train reservation from Houston to, you know, Manchester. Well, I'm going to go to something called Evolvi or Trainline and I'm going to do it. You know, well, okay, now you got two different channels, right? It's not just a GDS. So how do we bring these two things together, you know, so that you can report on them, right? So our awareness, you know, of the fragmentation and the need to put this fragmented content into some sort of workflow was heightened, right? Our awareness of it. But at the TTE Business Travel Show, I'm sure you got people that go there. You know, we do it all the time. In 2019, our CEO was facilitating a panel on operationalizing NDC, right? So good sales guy that I am, I thought, well, if he's going to facilitate that panel, somebody's going to come and ask me, how do you, you know, operationalize NDC?
Seems like a logical question.
Seems like a logical question, right? So I went back into our kind of work, right? You know, and I saw stuff we're doing, you know, I'm a little hesitant to name customer names here.
Of course, sure. No worries.
But a very large TMC for whom we do a lot of processing of travel policy, right? So take a reservation, bounce it against policy parameters. Is it in? Is it out? Do messaging. We're working with not a GDS PNR, but we're working with a little XML data packet, okay? You know, we have another extremely large OTA that everybody would know for whom we handle processing of schedule changes, right? Well, they work with, you know, folks that would be kind of in that omni-channel category, you know, folks like Farelogix and carriers like Lufthansa and United and others. Well, you know, we're actually taking those reservations and we are processing, you know, messaging around schedule changes, right? So what we saw was that we have a lot of kind of baseline experience in working with these types of bookings and bringing them into our systems. So for us, and I know I'm giving a really long answer to a short question, right? For us, we have focused a lot of our effort now because we see omnichannel, NDC, whatever you want to call it, as not really going away, right? Again, all of our work outside the U.S., right, sees that the carriers are serious about it, right? They're not going to change, right? It's going to grow, right? So for us, it's how do we build our data model so that we can ingest these types of reservations, right? And then we can apply our business rules to them. And I think that's what I've seen, a bit of a missing link, right? You know, a lot of the tools that are out there can produce a back office interface record. They can aggregate, right? They can show a fare. But in the end, right, these corporate oriented TMCs, right, they have certain SLAs, right, that go with quality control reporting and the like. And it's that ability to apply business rules to this omnichannel booking right? To line it up with the same types of service levels that they are required to perform to on GDS bookings, you know, and then in the end spit out, you know, high quality, you know, high quality record. So what does it mean to us? It means being able to capture a booking irrespective of where it originated, get it into a data model, right? That allows us to bucket the pieces and understand it, right, line it up with more traditional source, and then be able to produce the same type of an output. So that's us. That's what we're really trying to do right in this world.
Wow.
What do you think are the biggest, you know, Sarah and I, since we're in this side of things, the omnichannel side of things, if you will, hear a lot of different definitions and stories and myths. What myth would you say is sort of the biggest myth out there about omnichannel, in your opinion?
Well, you know, I think a real myth is that the servicing aspect of omnichannel will sort itself out.
Oh,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I love that.
Magical thinking.
It's magical, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, it is. It's like, oh, yeah, well, okay. Right. You know, again, I go back to 2019 when we first started trying to figure out, you know, what's our direction, what's our strategy, what's our story. Right. You know, and I won't name all the carriers, but, you know, I talked to a lot. Right. And I was a little bit surprised, you know, at the lack of awareness of what happens, you know, again, when somebody hits enter on a booking, the bottom of the iceberg, right? So I was like, okay. You know, and then I talked to, you know, a number of the TMCs. Now, I think this is probably more true here in the U.S. It's like, ah, yeah, GDS, we'll get around to it. And, you know, in truth, right? Sabre's working on it. Amadeus is working on it. Travelport's working on it. You know, you see every day in the trade press, you know, some new content deal, right? And that's all great, right? All good stuff. But then, you know, you get the TMCs that are kind of at ground zero, right? And I think that's the case study that you got to start looking at, right? And this is where this whole idea that it'll sort itself out, I'm not quite so sure. Right. I'll give you one illustration. Mm-hmm. Right. A guy I've known for years and years and years. Right. Over in the UK, he runs kind of a medium sized TMC. He's an Amadeus. Right. He's probably 70% of his bookings online. Right. 60-odd% of those are on BA. Right. And BA is, you know, one of the ones who really, you know, in the camp of, you know, omnichannel NDC, right?
NDC,
you know,
yep.
Very much, yes.
And very much, right? You know, but this TMC, right, you know, they want to drive, right? They're subject now to the passive segment, you know, fees, right?
Yep.
And where this gap, this servicing gap is this poor TMC, right? He's underwater already, right? Because the fee for his online booking is quite low, right? He's got to book NDC because the content's not available elsewhere, right? He's got the passive segment fees, and where the gap is he's got to get that booking back into his back office system. The way they do that, you got to give the GDS some credit, right? These interface records work really well for doing it,
yep.
Right? So he's got to find another way, right? There are so many different accounting systems, mid-office systems, back office systems outside the U.S., that's just not practical for a TMC of modest means to be able to go back to back office system, whatever it is, and say, hey, can you program for me, you know, an interface? It's just not going to happen. I would think, you know, and I think there's awareness now of servicing, right? I mean, I've sat in on, you know, lots of the IATA, you know, webinars and those kinds of things. There's no question there's awareness.
But coming from coming from a carrier background myself, I know it's a huge blind spot, I think, for many of the big carriers about how complex the servicing would actually turn out to be.
Yeah. Yeah. So something as simple as, and I won't even say it's simple, it's actually extremely complex, right? A schedule change, right? You know, I sat in, you know, and somebody listening to just sat on the same pod, the same webinar I did would probably recognize the story. But, you know, if I'm a TMC, for example, and I'm servicing Marine travel, right? Well, I'm getting crew members, you know, from place to place to place to place, you know, from different areas, right? Well, a schedule change on carrier X, right, going out and landing on their app somewhere, that's not quite, you know, servicing, right? You know, and if the TMC's got to pick up the phone and call the call center for carrier A, B, or C, right, are they staffed to do that? You know, probably not, right? I don't think they wanted to move to an omni-channel strategy so that they could trade one cost for another, right? So those are the kinds of things that I think really have to be sorted out. I mean, I will say a little shamelessly here, this is kind of where we play, right?
Right.
But that's the value proposition that I think we really want to bring to the industry is that, you know, there are people who kind of get it, right? And I feel like the different parties have to be open to the discussion, right? It can't be so much zero-sum game, right? The opportunities do exist, right, to be able to service those things. I think it's just trying to get the right attention of the right people at the right time. So,
where do you see the industry going over the next, let's say, 3 to 5 year time horizon?
Yeah, you know, anticipating
and we'll narrow it down to just around omni-channel bookings, not in general. Yeah.
Not yeah. like at large.
yeah, I'm glad. Thank you. Because that I would pass on that one. Go get another cup of coffee. But yeah, for me, like 3 to 5 years is not that long of a time horizon, right? I would not imagine anything radical, like, you know, the whole thing isn't going to blow up, you know, and be reshaped in 3 to 5 years, right? So there's going to be some progression, you know, from where we are to something we could kind of see, right?
Right.
I would think as regards the adoption of omnichannel, the next 3 to 5 years to me would be if you can get a more reasonable awareness amongst, you know, what is really kind of a limited set of stakeholders, right? You got your carriers as your suppliers, right? You got your corporate buyers, and we haven't really talked too much about the corporate buyers, you know, and then you get the servicing agent, right? The TMC, right? You know, and I think it just kind of distilling from lots of things, you know, you've read and I've read over the past, right? You know, it's almost a little easy to say, well, you know, maybe the TMC is disintermediated and it goes to some sort of direct, you know, channel, and, you know, who needs a TMC? Well, you know, I think COVID, you know, kind of changed that tune, right? You know, it really helps to pick the phone up and call somebody when someone's stuck in a place, right? Things like unused tickets, right? Well, who's keeping track of them and what's the carrier policy, right? And how do I make sure they get processed properly for an exchange? So I think the value proposition of a travel agency, TMC or otherwise, you know, I think was proven, you know, important, right, during the course of COVID, right? I also think that in this 3 to 5 year time horizon, right, the notion of travel, the notions that are running around in the head of travel buyers are going to have to crystallize a little bit. I mentioned this, you know, we were at GBTA. My view is that there's really two kind of camps on the buyer side, right? There's what I would call the aspirational camp, you know, which is legit, right? I mean, the promise of targeted offers, bundled offers, you know, ability to negotiate a better package for my, you know, my company based on the parameters, the types of travel is really good, right? That's great stuff.
Exciting.
You know,
more
consumer experience. It's exciting, right? On the other hand, right, there's what I would kind of think of as the more functional, right? And these tend to be travel managers who've operated a bit down more in the operational areas. They too see opportunity, right? Look, if the carriers can cut down some of their distribution costs, if they can, you know, offer more tailored things, I can make commitments to them. And in return, they can make commitments back to me, which means I'm procuring and operationalizing travel better. I think those two camps are kind of out there, right? And
right.
swirling a little bit. So probably my hands across the screen there. but I think, you know, some buyer notion of what would that reality of an omni-channel in 5 years be is going to happen. So my vision, I think if you can get kind of the three of them, you know, starting to align more on what's a realistic, and I use the word operating model, not just what could it be, but how do you operationalize it? You know, that would be a great thing, right, in 3 to 5 years.
So kind of wrapping up here on kind of the more formal side, what is it that excites you about staying in this industry? What is it that makes you excited to come to work, and what do you see that's exciting in the future?
Well, yeah. Again, it goes back to that thing, 17 years. I ask myself that every morning, but I'm still here. but, you know, it's just one, everybody, I guess, says this, but to me, it feels like no other industry, right? It's fun. It's about people. It's about places. It's about problems to be solved, right? You know, all of our customers, right? You know, they experience a lot of the same things, right? Whether you're a big leisure-oriented OTA, whether you're, you know, we do all the travel data consolidation for the U.S. government, right? So they've got their own, right, set of things and concerns and ideas that they're trying to, you know, move forward and problems they're trying to solve. Small TMCs, they all operate, you know, kind of in the same general area, but with just enough twist, right? Just enough difference, right, to make it interesting for us to help them improve their value proposition, their business, their ability to service a customer, their ability to grow. I feel like we really do contribute a lot, right, to our customers' success. And I know it sounds kind of corny, you know, but it's true, right? You know, I look at what they do. I look at the successes they have. You know, you would not see a lot of the successes as related to us necessarily, but in an awful lot of press releases in the industry about new innovations, you know, I take great pride in the fact that we're powering those things.
I love that answer.
And, you know,
I do too.
You're working with travel companies. Whenever they have meetings, they get to go to really nice places. When last would I have ever gone to Tenerife? You know?
Finally, the elephant in the room comes up.
Yeah. My God. Yeah. If I'm working in cars, I go to Detroit. Who cares about that? You know, Tenerife was cool. Stockholm at Christmas was wonderful. I love it. Yeah.
How can you pass on that?
How
for
can
sure.
You say no. Yeah.
ARC Travel Demand offers timely visibility into air travel activity from the industry's most accurate and comprehensive airline sales and traffic data. Users gain insight into the current travel environment and upcoming travel demand with data up to 12 months in the future and 5 years of historical data for benchmarking.
Well, we're at the lightning round portion of our podcast. We look at this as a bit more lighthearted approach to some travel questions. And so what we're going to do, Kyle, is shoot out 5 questions and Sarah's going to kick it off. And you say the first thing that comes to mind.
No pressure.
Okay.
No pressure. Sarah, take it away.
Good.
All right. What's the most beautiful place you've ever visited?
Wow. I would have to say it was Oslo at Christmas. My family heritage is largely Norwegian, you know, and Swedish. But, okay. You know, I remember I got there, it was near Christmas time, and two things happened to me. One was I was out for a walk, and I was coming down a road, don't even know where it is, but it was this park, and I heard this lilting singing voice right out in the distance. And I swear to God, it was my grandmother, right? And I looked down and there's this girl swinging on a swing. And it just like was like, oh, overwhelming. And then that night we were on the main kind of drag in there between, like, there's like a cathedral and like the parliament, and it was snowing, and you're walking down through here and they're selling reindeer skins and hot wine and all that kind of, and I will never forget that. It was just extraordinary.
You could paint a picture off that description.
Wow. Yeah. That was pretty good.
It was amazing.
I want to go.
It was so impactful. Yeah. It was just like, wow.
Amazing. Okay. Up next is, what is your favorite airport, or if you don't have one, your favorite travel experience? I wish everyone could see his face on this one.
Yeah. There have been a lot. I would say probably my favorite airport is Indianapolis, because it means I'm coming home.
Or it means
I'm going on the road, right? So, I would say that. Yeah, I would
okay.
say that.
No, wonderful. That's awesome. Yeah. Okay. Sarah?
All right. What is one book you take to a desert island?
Oh, I got another one. I don't want to give any too conventional answers. Let me pick one.
You can be conventional if you want to be. Yeah.
Yeah. I have to think about that one.
Okay. You want
to
come back?
We'll come back to that. But before the end, we'll come back to that.
Okay.
Sorry,
we'll
to disrupt
back.
The flow there. Yeah.
What is the best piece of advice that you'd give someone?
You know, it comes from one of the things I really took from my consulting time, right? I was very much, with a methodology, I read part of it, incorporated, and I read, Stephen Covey, Seven Habits, Highly Effective People. Right. One of the habits was seek first to understand before being understood. If I take anything, it's that. Yeah.
Very nice.
All right. Would you prefer to have the superpower of invisibility, mind reading, or flight?
Oh, wow. Huh. Flight.
Yeah.
You know why?
Why?
This, again, I had this guy, I swear I must have been a teenager, but I remember I had a flying dream. Everybody probably has them, right?
Yeah.
But this one is just like so stuck in my mind over all these years. I remember I was flying and it was this big red barn down below me, and it was just this kind of open, farmland kind of space. And I remember the feeling in the dream of just kind of swooping down and coming up, and I was like, wow, that would be really cool to be able to do that. I think that would be a lot of fun.
Awesome.
You missed your calling of describing things for people.
I appreciate that,
calling for that. Now you don't get away from the book question.
Yeah,
no,
I'm gonna re-ask the book question now.
Well, it would probably be the same answer a lot of people would give. I would take a Bible with me,
Okay.
Only because, it's the meta narrative of everything, right? I can read good stories, I can read bad stories, I can say, God, I wouldn't want to do that, or should I do that, or what? That would probably be the one. I'd never be wanting, for something that would be interesting and valuable.
Very nice. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you very much. I really enjoyed the conversation. It was great.
Oh, well, yeah, thank you. It was a lot of fun. I appreciate it. So I hope it was, somewhat useful to you. At least.
Absolutely.
So it'd be great.
Great way to round it out. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the ARC Talk podcast. Be sure to subscribe and follow ARC on LinkedIn, Facebook, and Twitter for the latest updates. We look forward to bringing you more in-depth discussions around omnichannel retailing in this series.